government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Dolan, and this is American Conversations. And we are honored this morning to have Senator Ron Johnson with us. Coming the last 2 weeks, Senator, have been rock and roll.
Yeah, we live in interesting times, perilous times.
Perilous times, absolutely. So I didn't talk to you before the convention. It was very busy out there. And the weekend before was one of those perilous times. Former President Donald Trump underwent an attempted assassination. What do we know about this at this point in time? Because I was watching the director of the Secret Service. Well, first of all, I saw that she had showed up at the convention, and Senator Marsha Blackburn and some other senators were trying to get some answers out of her. And then she, you know, testified, and she didn't seem to be too prepared.
Well, we don't know as much as we should know. Mm-hmm. I think that's the first thing I should state. Federal law enforcement has not been forthright. They've not been transparent. Local law enforcement has been more transparent, which is what we were able to base our preliminary findings on. And I released very incomplete, very preliminary findings to try and provide an example. You know, we had Acting Director Rona, who I think seems to be a pretty sincere and genuine individual. He said he can't defend what happened. He's already taking corrective action. But you know, I urged him to start holding very up-to-date briefings. Let the American people realize that what we know is incomplete. It's preliminary. We got that. It may change, but this is what we know. In our Wednesday briefing with the Senate, with Director Ray and Director Cheadle at that time, this is Wednesday after the assassination, you know, both directors say, you know, we need to really be careful, you know, not to let conspiracy theories take hold, not to let them spread. Well, if you want to prevent that, you have to be transparent. You got to let people know things. You can't just dummy up here like they've basically done. So, you know, what we do know in my initial findings, talking to local law enforcement, is first of all, the Secret Service did not attend the 9 o'clock security briefing the day of the event, which is astounding. I mean, they're in charge of security.
They're responsible for the perimeter.
Well, they're responsible for security of the event, okay? Right. They're responsible for everything. They can assign tasks to local law enforcement, that's fine. But they got to be in charge. They have to show up. And they didn't show up for the 9 o'clock briefing. I think the next thing that I've said, by the way, just about all the things you would assume the Secret Service would do to protect the people it's protecting, they didn't do. So the second finding was they were all on different communication channels. So the county law enforcement, their SWAT and sniper teams were on different communication channels than their local patrol officers were, who are all on different channels from the Secret Service. They're all feeding it in through the Central Communications Center, I think run by the Butler County law enforcement. But that just created delays, obviously. That's why they could see this guy at 5 o'clock was the first sighting, or I mean 5:10. They took pictures of him at 5:14. You know, a number of things happened before then. And you know, President Trump was shot at 6:11. There's plenty of time to find this guy, I think. There was plenty of time to, if we hadn't found him, just delay the appearance of President Trump on stage until they did find him, and they could neutralize the, you know, determine if what there was a threat and neutralize it. They didn't do these things. So again, there's way more that we don't know than what we should know already. But there's a lot of investigatory steps here. You know, Congress, we really don't have the resources to do the in-depth investigation. I think FBI said they have something like 700 agents on this. I mean, the number of interviews they've already done. Okay, that's fine. But we need to provide complete and thorough oversight over those interviews. That's what Congress's role is. And unfortunately, we really can't trust the FBI. I mean, Director Wray testified this week in Congress and said he wasn't even sure if it was a bullet that pierced the ear of President Trump. It could have been, maybe it was a glass shard. I mean, that was a conspiracy theory of the left. I guess to downplay the severity of an assassination attempt, does it make any difference whether it was a bullet or whether it was glass shards from a teleprompter? I mean, it really doesn't. But the fact is, it was a bullet. I saw a picture where it shows a hole. The hospital report says it's a hole. The fact the FBI director didn't know that 12 days after the event, it's just another reason why he should either resign or be fired.
Senator, I've done a lot of investigations, criminal investigations, and if they're on different communication systems, many times there will be on a local level, the local law enforcement liaison may be literally in the same room with the Secret Service liaison. So if they're not on the same system, they can actually get the information from the field and share it with somebody else. Do we know if the liaisons between Secret Service and the local guys are in the same room?
I can't say it definitively. I believe that was probably the case, but again, that's one of the many puzzle pieces that we need to assemble here to find out exactly what happened, which is why, for example, I wrote a preservation of record demand to all the agencies, federal agencies, the day after the assassination. You know, we need all of the communications preserved. You know, mm-hmm. we need all the written emails and texts and everything before the event, after the event. You know, all this evidence needs to be preserved so that we can provide the oversight in terms of investigation. But yeah, you would assume that was the case. But again, I would assume they would have been basically, on the same communication channel. I would assume the Secret Service would have shown up at the security briefing and really directed people, made sure there was somebody on that roof, make sure there was somebody covering the water tower. I mean, again, these are just basic precautions they should have taken, and they weren't taken, which is why Acting Director Rowe said he can't defend what happened.
Do we know why the Secret Service didn't show up at their own meeting for their own event?
Don't know that yet. Again, that's...
Okay.
Again...
We don't know.
They haven't been forthcoming with us. We're going to hold a hearing with Acting Director Rowe. Listen, I appreciate the briefing, but it's only an hour long. I got to ask basically, one question or set of questions, okay? So that briefing itself was, again, it was confidence building, but very incomplete. The hearing will be incomplete as well. It'll be short. We'll only get 7 minutes to ask questions. Maybe we'll do a second round. But again, that's investigations. You need detailed work. You need to interview somebody, transcribe an interview for hours. And there are hundreds of people you need to interview that way. So it's going to take some time. But again, that's why the FBI has to be transparent in everything they've done. They have to transcribe all these things. They have to preserve all those records. Then our investigators have to also be interviewing people, but certainly go over those transcriptions.
And it has to happen fast before people get, if they hear something and all of a sudden it changes their judgment of what they think they saw the day of on the ground.
Which is why my investigators immediately the next day started reaching out to law enforcement and started getting those interviews just over the phone. And quite honestly, I'm very pleased that the chairman of the Permanent Subcommittee Investigation, Blumenthal, agrees with me. We need to do transcribed interviews now before members. Right. It sounds like Ranking Member Paul and Chairman Peters of the full committee are on the same page. So we're trying to do a joint investigation here, joint oversight. That would be best if it's bipartisan and joint and complete.
Do we know if there was a human being on the top of the water tower?
No, but what evidence I've seen of that is pretty sketchy.
Okay, because
what I do know, again, eyewitness accounts, there were 8 shells found by the assassin's body.
Right. And okay. Cheadle did not know that when she testified before the committee, which is astounding.
Just wasn't honest with people. She knew it.
Yeah. Do we have any more insight of why she testified the way she did when she was deflecting and saying, I'm sorry, you're going to have to check with the FBI? Or I don't know how many times she said, can I get back to you on that?
Well, first of all, Congress has allowed its oversight authority to atrophy. You know, we don't enforce it. And so this is really just this general template of members of the administration, no matter what issue, coming before Congress and not being honest and forthright. So they always use the tired old explanation. Well, I'd love to give you this information, but there's an active investigation. Or what was even more infuriating, she kept using the excuse, well, it's only been 9 days.
Oh, and I know.
It's been 9 days. You ought to have all kinds of information. So again, it was lame, which is why, I mean, she was just forced to resign.
Well, she should have. I was waiting when I watched the hearing. I was thinking to myself, how many more times do you need to hear on both sides of the aisle that you have to resign or you're going to be fired or you're going to have, you know, an investigation for perjury? I was surprised. She was stone face. It didn't matter what any of the members said to her.
This is exactly how administrations from both sides of the aisle, I mean, doesn't mean Democrat, Republican, that's how they testified before Congress. They don't tell people the full truth. They're not transparent. They haven't been held accountable. It's time that we need to reinvigorate our oversight capability, our authority. That means holding more people in contempt. If the Department of Justice doesn't prosecute them, we probably need to send our sergeant at arms out there to apprehend them and, you know, force them to turn over what documents we're demanding. Again, we're going to have to ratchet up the pressure on the administrations in terms of getting the American public the information they deserve. Again, this is giving the public the middle finger when you don't provide information to Congress. We are their representatives.
So let's go I have to ask you one more thing. What about the encrypted bank accounts overseas? I don't know whether they're for crypto or whatever that crooks apparently had. Do we know if that's even true at this point?
Yeah, that I don't have any insight into. Again, that's what we need, the information. We need to provide oversight on that. Again, there's an awful lot.
Yeah.
About this investigation. This does not seem overly straightforward. I know the FBI said, you know, one shooter. And he certainly fits the profile of just a tragic kid, quite honestly, lonely, bullied, you know, I mean, I feel horrible for his parents.
You know,
it fits that profile, but there's so many things that are so many unanswered questions here that we need answers to.
There's also, I can advise you that there's two types of toxicology tests you can do. One is to find out if you have illegal drugs in your system, which is what a lot of people do. But then there's a second type of test that you can find out if they're on SSRIs or a combination of SSRIs. And we know through records that people that I work with, they have received from the FDA, they know, and they've known, these are records that the FDA wanted to keep quiet from 2004 to 2014. The side effects of some SSRIs and the combination thereof, if you mix them all together, you can have an increase in anger, an increase in violence, an increase in murder, and an increase in suicide. So if you get to that point, and I will email your office the name of that toxicology, because that is something that somebody should do if they haven't already buried this guy. I don't know what the status is on his funeral.
I actually have my staff looking at that because I want to ask that question on Tuesday. And again, this is something our federal health agencies, they want to bury any kind of adverse events on SSRIs, just like they want to bury any kind of adverse events on the COVID vaccines.
That's right. But I have the expert for you, okay, that I can put you in touch with. Okay, all please. Right. So on a higher note, on a fun note, how was the convention? Because I wasn't able to go. I was working on some books, but it certainly looked fabulous from a television point of view.
It was. I mean, I think it was well-structured, well-organized. I think the TV audience had to be impressed with the unity of the Republican Party. I've never felt the Republican Party as unified during my time in office. It was really gratifying. I mean, all the delegates from different states, the law enforcement from different states, very impressed with Milwaukee. You know, love the weather, but in particular, just like Wisconsinites. I mean, Wisconsinites are just really nice people. So it was fun. It was exhausting from my standpoint. My convention started at 4 o'clock Sunday morning and didn't end until President Trump ended his speech. But no, it was a great convention. My concern is overconfidence. And now that Biden has been shoved aside, pushed aside, and now we've got
he's been kicked off the wagon. I mean, he's gone,
kicked to the curb. But now the mainstream media is going to rehabilitate Kamala Harris, set her on a pedestal, reveal her as the new Messiah, and that's going to be difficult for the Trump campaign to counter. Quite honestly, when you're up against the mainstream media, they control the narrative. It's going to be tough. So we cannot be overconfident. We got to work our tails off till the last vote is cast.
I thought it was very interesting when she had her first two events and she was talking about that she knows Donald Trump's type. But I investigated the Catholic Church over 20 years ago globally, here in the United States and abroad. And I have I remember when she came in as the DA in California, in San Francisco and Anaheim. Her predecessor actually was working with the Catholic victims, and they had collected a lot of information. And when the law was passed that there was an extension for statute of limitations for sexual victims, a lot of them wanted to get the information from the DA's office. But she won her election. She took over the office. And she did not work with the Catholic victims nor their lawyers at the time. And then when she was made the California AG, and you had Sacramento, Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Jose, again, she did not work with the Catholic victims. So when she talks about child protection, she has a record that a lot of people don't know about, which is she did not work with the victims. And there's a host of Catholic victims in those dioceses that I'm certain will be quite outspoken.
Although the mainstream media will cover it all up. They're not going to trot out any dirty linen of Kamala Harris. It's just going to be singing her praises.
I know, but I used to work for four networks, so I'm going to make certain that we get some of these stories out there because it's pretty unusual. I don't know where she, they're trying to tout that she has experience in Africa, which I think is hysterical because, I mean, you could say that about Janet Yellen because about 2.5 years ago, Jill was sent over there. Kamala was sent over to the continent and Yellen was sent over there. And that's when they were trying to do the negotiations with the WHO because there was a pushback by some of the African countries. So I don't think that that's going to work. And I don't think it's going to work for her positions on foreign policy in terms of the border.
Well, I think the most galling example right now of how the mainstream media is going to cover for her is they're all backtracking on the fact that she really wasn't the border czar. They all declared her the border czar, and now they're saying, she really wasn't the border czar. Yes, she was.
Yes, she was, and the president said it, and we've got his quote, and the tape does exist because he made the announcement and he made the appointment. Well, let's go to a break because when we come back, I do want to talk to you about all the work that you're doing on supporting the border whistleblowers.